It will be a week tomorrow since Christine Mihalik disappeared while coming home from this store. In those 6 days, the community has come to realize that a missing child in this area is not merely the problem of the parents. Most of those out collecting funds today have families also.
From February 1976 to March 1977 in Oakland County, Michigan, four children were kidnapped, held up for 19 days, and then murdered. The killer would then dress them in their freshly pressed clothing and leave their bodies carefully positioned on blankets of snow or laying in full sight next to a road. The killer was dubbed the Oakland County Child Killer, or the Babysitter, and their killings were also dubbed the Snow Killings. The murders resulted in the largest murder investigation in United States history at that time, but it failed to produce a suspect.
Jeffrey Dahmer, an unassuming chocolate factory worker, would eventually confess that he had seduced, murdered, and dismembered 17 young men. He even ate some of his victims' body parts.
He was charming, good-looking, and terrifying. A real-life monster hiding in plain sight, Ted Bundy.
The Black Dahlia was a celebrity who was mutilated and found drained of blood with a haunted-like smile carved on her face.
I'm someone who has been a murderer for almost 20 years. It isn't that impossible in this society. It happens.
I'm Rihanna Miller, and you're listening to Mystery Mondays. Listener discretion is advised.
Joy's back then, and still does today. Joy's a reputation for being a safe community, good place to raise a family, good schools, and so forth. So to have four kids kidnapped and murdered, right in the middle of the 70s in this county, it was surreal.
In the afternoon, on Sunday, February 15th, 1976, 12-year-old Mark Stevens disappeared after leaving the American Legion Hall to go home to watch television.
And when I got there and he wasn't there, it's like, something's wrong with this picture. My mom called from the American Legion. She asked me, is Mark there? I'm like, no. And she's like, well, I don't understand that. And the Ferndale police says, well, we have to wait about 24 hours to report a missing person. And it's like, for a child, you know, a 12-year-old kid, you gotta wait 24 hours?
4 days later, on February 19th, his body was found around 12 miles from his home, laying in a snowbank in a parking lot in the South Field. He was dressed in the same clothes that he was wearing on the day he was abducted, and they were cleaned and pressed. An autopsy determined that he had been strangled to death. Rope burns were discovered on his wrist, indicating that his hands had been tightly bound.
A person walking his dog in a strip mall in Southfield. I think it was called Fairfax Plaza. Saw something against a short brick wall, and he said he thought it was a mannequin. You know, he walked up, and it was a body of a small boy.
Real fear shot through the community. Real fear on the point of hysteria.
In the late afternoon of Wednesday, December 22nd, 1976, 12-year-old Jill Robbins got into an argument with her mother and decided to pack a bag and run away from home. It was the last day that she was seen alive.
I am Jill Robinson's sister. I was 9 and she was 12.
I said, Jill, where are you going? She said, none of your business. And I'm the one that was the last one to see her, and I had to go out to the shed to look for her bike because my mom was gone to work or something. And so I had to go out and look, and her bike was gone.
So I think that she went to my dad's, which was like 5 miles down the road, 6 in Birmingham. And she was last seen somewhere along the way at Tiny Tim's Hobby Shop or whatever that was called.
The next day, on December 23rd, her bicycle was discovered behind a store. 3 days later, her body was found lying on the side of Interstate 75 within full sight of the Troy Police Station.
So they said that she was, shot in the face and her body was found. And it's unbelievable to me that someone doesn't know something about her whereabouts from those days that she was missing, because how can you just kill a 12-year-old in the middle of a very busy intersection and no one knows anything? How can that be?
Like Mark Sevens, she was fully clothed in the clothing that she had worn when she disappeared. Placed next to her body, police found her backpack, which was intact. Like Mark, her body appeared to be carefully placed on a pile of snow. On Sunday, January 2nd, 1977, at around 3 p.m., 10-year-old Christine Malik went to a nearby 7-Eleven and bought some magazines. She was never to be seen alive again.
Christine was kept for 19 days. I thought it was just so poignant that her mom said, Deborah Jarvis said, the reason she was kept for 19 days is because they so enjoyed her company because she was such a sweet kid.
Christine was fully dressed and her body positioned in the snow. The killer had also closed Christine's eyes and folded her arms across her chest. Although her body was left along a rural road in Franklin Village, it was left in full view of several homes. An autopsy later revealed that she had been smothered.
It's just a place that you can't go and think about where she would have been for 19 days and what she would have gone through. I can't go there.
Followed by Christine's murder, authorities announced that they believed that the children had been murdered by stalking the area. An official task force was formed specifically to investigate the murders. It was made up of law enforcement from 13 communities and led by the Michigan State Police. On Wednesday, March 16, 1977, at around 8 p.m., 11-year-old Timothy left his Birmingham home with about 30 cents to buy candy, his skateboard tucked under his arm. He was headed to a drugstore near his house in Birmingham. After making his purchase, he left a store through the back exit, which led to a parking lot where he seemed to disappear into thin air.
So now police know they have a serial child killer on their hands, and they organized the largest manhunt in U.S. history at the time.
There were differences between each case, different enough that we just couldn't connect all the dots. But when Timothy King was found murdered, things became very clear.
Timothy King's father appeared on television pleading with the kidnapper to not hurt his son and to let him go.
Somebody from television came to me, and I just thought I was talking to Tim.
Well, I want to say hi to Tim. We love you, Tim. God bless you. Stay tough. I have one other statement to those persons or person who may be with Tim. I don't know if you have children or if you want to have some, but please treat Tim the same way you would your own kid. Talk to him. He's a talkative kid if you've spent some time with him.
Marion King, Timothy's mother, wrote a letter that she hoped she would see Timothy soon and that she could give him his favorite meal, Kentucky Fried Chicken. The letter was printed in the Detroit News. On the night of March 22, 1977, Timothy King's body was found in a ditch along the road in Livonia. He was fully clothed, but it was obvious that his clothes had been cleaned and pressed. His skateboard had been placed next to his body. An autopsy report showed that Timothy had been sexually assaulted with an object and smothered to death. It was also revealed that he had eaten chicken before he was murdered.
I'm convinced to this day that when Timmy was kidnapped, he knew what was going to happen to him. And as an 11-year-old kid, there was nothing he could do about it. I can't imagine anybody doing what they're doing. And I can't imagine people not turning people in that do that. But I can't change society.
Before Timothy's body was found, a woman came forward with information about the missing boy. She told the task force that on the same night that boy went missing, she saw him talking to an older man in the parking lot behind the drugstore. She described Timothy and his skateboard. Not only had she seen Timothy, but she also got a pretty good look of the man he was talking to, as well as his car. She told the authorities the man was driving a blue AMC Gremlin with white stripes on the side. With her help, a police sketch artist was able to do a composite drawing of the older man and of the car he was driving. The sketch was released to the public. The task force developed a profile on the basis of the descriptions that were given by witnesses who saw Timothy talking to a man on the night that he was abducted. The profile described a white male, dark complexion, aged 25 to 35, with shaggy hair and long sideburns. Because the person seemed to be able to gain the trust of children, the task force believed that the killer was possibly a police officer, a doctor, or even a priest. The profile went on to describe the killer as someone who was familiar with the area and probably lived alone, possibly in a remote area too, since he was able to, for several days, hold people without friends or family or even neighbors knowing. Over 18,000 tips came into the task force, and all of them were investigated. Although there were other crimes at the time that the police discovered while doing their investigations, the task force had not gotten any closer to capturing the killer. Detroit psychiatrist Dr. Bruce Danto and a member of the task force team received a letter a few weeks after Timothy King was murdered. The letter was written by someone who called himself Alan and claimed to be one of his roommates, Frank, who was the Oakland County child killer. In the letter, Alan described himself as a guilt-ridden, remorseful, scared, suicidal, and on the brink of losing his mind. He said that he had been on many road trips looking for boys, but that he was never present when Frank abducted the children and when he murdered them. Alan also wrote that Frank drove a gremlin, but he had junked it in Ohio, never to be seen again. To offer investigators a motive for the murders, Alan said that Frank killed children while fighting in Vietnam and was traumatized by it. He was taking revenge on rich people so that they would suffer like he did while he was in Vietnam. Alan wanted to work out a deal and offered to turn over incriminating pictures that could be used as evidence against Frank. In exchange, he wanted the governor of Michigan to sign an agreement that would give him immunity from prosecution. Dr. Dano agreed to meet Alan at a bar, but Alan did not show up and he was never to be heard from again. In December of 1978, the decision was made to discontinue the task force and the state police took over the investigation. The state police had taken over the investigation and that's the last of it. There hasn't been any other evidence or anything to have come up since then. There aren't really any suspects other than this anonymous Frank. The case has gone cold. This has been another episode of Mystery Mondays. You're listening to 91.3 WHJE.